हरिः ॐ सहनववतु सहनौ भुनक्तु सहवीर्यङ्करवावहै तेजस्विनावधीतमस्तु मा विद्विषावहै ॐ शान्ति शान्ति शान्तिः ॐ जय श्रीकृष्ण चैतन्य प्रभु नित्यानन्द श्री अद्वैत गदाधर श्रीवासरि गौरभक्तवृन्द हरे कृष्ण 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 हरे 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 राम 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 हरे हरे
सो Paramatma Sundarbha, Adhyayana 1, Adhikarana 1. Definitions of the Jiva and Paramatma, page 11. Everywhere this Brahman has his hands and feet. Everywhere Brahman has his eyes, heads, and mouths. Everywhere are his ears. Brahman covers everything in the universe. Bhagavad Gita 13:14. The distinction is also clear where the Lord teaches about the jiva's practice of knowledge, starting with freedom from pride. Bhagavad Gita 13:17-12, footnote 2. The jiva must be endowed with a list of qualities to realize the Lord. As well, it is said, Mayi chananya yogena bhaktir avya picharini. Knowledge means steady bhakti to me with undivided attention. Right, so, as you see now is that we're trying, before was introduced the aspect of what is Brahman, who is Bhagavan, how everything is there, everybody's basic position, right? And so then now we're getting into actually that relationship. That's for the cold. Okay, I was going to say, yeah, everyone wears the mask now for the cold, right? Yeah. 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 So, you know, it fogs up your glass. So, the interesting thing is how it gets cold like this suddenly, and what you wear now, you'll see when it gets really cold, you'll still be wearing the same thing. Because it's just that first initial when you're not used to it, and then you put on more, and then you don't put on any more after that. You know, or at least not much. You know. So now we're seeing is that the qualification, because it's already been established that surrender means that the Lord reveals himself. There's no other way. So then why would he reveal himself? Because he deals with how you surrender to him. So that's the whole point. When you surrender in devotion, then he reveals. So what qualifications are necessary for this? Right? In other words, one can surrender in a moment because that's the nature of the jiva. But the problem comes up is, generally speaking, the jiva doesn't because of so many obstacles, right? So there's natural qualities that the jiva has when they surrender. Having a surrendered jiva, or surrendered soul, then they have certain qualities. Just inherent, they're natural. So now, for these natural qualities So now, as we see, is because we're by sadhana, we're basically using reverse engineering. Right, we know what the jivas are, and then we're taking them from wherever they are and trying to create favorable situations to bring them closer. But it's not the favorable situation that brings them any closer. It's the endeavor to please Krishna, and the endeavor that you're trying to do that to please Krishna. So in other words, these qualities, like here, pridelessness, is that it's not that we're trying to develop pridelessness. It's that we're aware of pride, that it gets in the way of devotional service. So pridelessness is the natural quality of someone who does have that nature of service for Krishna. Right? So, therefore then, we're always aware of whenever pride comes up in our life. So that's why it mentions you don't have to, it's not a separate study. Right? You know, sometimes it's no, we have to we have to do some practices and all that. And then we'll come up with some nice corporate method of how to practice pridelessness. You know, like that. You know, like listen to the middle management or something. You know, so these kind of things are that's artificial. just in your regular day-to-day activities, you're always going to be presented with pride. Because anything you can do that's working okay, that you're comfortable with, there's always a chance of becoming proud. So we have to be aware that pride doesn't disturb. And why doesn't it? Because it's not useful in bhakti. Right? That's one of the symptoms of the surrendered soul, is that he judges everything on what its qualifications are in bhakti, how it's useful to bhakti. That's how everything's judged. So if it's useful for bhakti, that we do. Right? And if it's not useful for bhakti, we don't do. Or it's useful for bhakti, but not right now. Like Bhaktivinoda Thakur gives the idea, the point is that, let's say that the chanting of the Brahma Gayatri, right? The chanting of the Gayatri then is from the position of, around the back. Yeah, that's what gets you. I was thinking, well, if you put it on this way, but then this, maybe you have to have two, one each way. Right? So the Brahma Gayatri, what's it doing? It's bringing you to the spiritual platform. What's the purpose of the spiritual platform? To be engaged in Krishna service and transcendental, right? So here we're using the division that Prabhupada uses, spiritual and transcendental. So spiritual means it brings you off the material platform onto the spiritual, but then the further stage is the devotional, right? Then with the devotional, then you move forward, into service to Krishna, right? So it's a platform that you function on. It's a good platform. Like being in the kitchen is a good place to cook. But being in the kitchen is not cooking. Right? So just like being on the spiritual platform is not devotional, but it's a good position to be devotional from. Right? It's the best position. Right? It means more than passion, goodness, passion, or ignorance. Right? So, yeah, sometimes it's like, we have these sattvic clubs, trying to make people sattvic, but then they're thinking that from sattva comes bhakti. No. From sattva, you can get to the spiritual platform. There's some idea of the spiritual platform from there. But bhakti is independent. It comes on its own. So the only way people come closer to bhakti is by being engaged or exposed to bhakti. Right? So here's that. Therefore, then chanting of the Gayatri, it makes one spiritual. I'm talking about Brahma Gayatri. Right? So then you're engaged in devotional service. So let us say we're hearing a class. Right? So we're already doing the purpose of the Gayatri. The purpose is to bring you the spiritual platform so you can chant Gayatri. So you can hear and chant about the Lord. Right? So therefore, then the devotee wouldn't be inclined to stop the hearing and chanting process to go somewhere and sit down and do all their mantras and this and that and call the Gayatri and do the whole thing. Because the purpose of it's always been, it's already there in the class. Does that make sense? So that's a symptom of someone advanced in devotional service. Not during Mangal Arati, people are sitting down there facing east, right, the wall like there, just a wall. And, chanting their Gayatri, being big Brahmins, while they could be taking darshan of the deity and singing for the deity, because the purpose of that is to do service, and so then they're not. So you wouldn't do that, like that. Yeah, we're big Brahmins and all that, but we're not big Brahmins. You know what I'm saying? Not by a long shot. Got this one little thing sticking out. Okay. Does that make sense? So the whole point is our perspective is very different than the karmis and jnanis. So this whole thing of snuggling up to the karmis and jnanis and trying to make everybody feel good and everybody's good and we're all good and hey, aren't we all buddy buddy? That's not actually our point. Because we're doing, because they're karmis and jnanis, and karmis and jnanis are respectable, so therefore we like to be respected, dhanam, janam, sundarim. So therefore then, we're all cool. You're cool, I'm cool, we're all cool, I think from the 60s it was called I'm okay, you're okay, A little dated, but what to do? And so then we're missing the point that it's about pure bhakti. And so, therefore, pride gets in the way of pure bhakti. Therefore, it's not on the list. Right? Things like varnashram, this, that, they're useful when they come into play. But the purpose of it is direct devotional service. So if I had an opportunity for direct devotional service, where does the Varnashram come in? Like we're hearing Bhagavatam. What does Varnashram got to do with it? So who's speaking? Who's hearing? It doesn't matter. Because it doesn't support. But let's say we're doing social interactions and that. We have to have some basis. I meet you. You know, what's our interaction? How do we interact? So there may be the closeness and devotion or a friendship or, you know, that'll be ashram side or there's varna side. You know, you're the boss, I'm working for you, so that'll be the relationship or the other way around. You know, we're two people that work for someone else, so we'll have a relationship and that, but with them we'll have... So then it has a use. Right? Because we're connecting that to Krishna. You know, as is pointed out, you know... The aspect of performing your varnashram duties and that to please Krishna. And so, yes, it's a basis. It's not the goal. It's not that the varnashram is the standard. No, it's something that supports. So it's not an anga of bhakti. Right? And those who follow varnashram without devotion, then bhakti is an anga of what they do. Because they have to worship the Lord and things like that. So it's part of what they do. But they're not seeing this balance that how where it's useful and where it's not. Right? If we're worshiping Krishna, we don't have to worship the forefathers. Okay? You're worshiping the forefathers because there's a sense of respect for people above you. Right? You know, you got the family line and all. But Krishna is the Pita Maha. He's the one that's, he's the origin of everybody. So if we're worshiping him, we don't need to worship the Pitris or the demigods. Right? But on a normal thing, we're going to deal nicely with people. So the Bhutas, you know, the Bhutatma and the Brahmins, you know, we're going to deal nicely. But the main thing then for us is going to be the Vaishnavas. You know? And so then we're going to worship the Lord, you know, be friendly with the devotees, kind to the juniors, and avoid those who are not interested. No matter how great and fabulous they are, super qualified, super rich, super intelligent, you know, super amount of letters after their names, it doesn't matter. We'll deal with them according to the etiquettes, because they're all part and parcel of Krishna, but that's why we're dealing. Not because, you know, Suridam Sarva Bhutanam, I'm the friend of everybody, so I got to be nice to everybody, like that. No, it's that... Everybody's part and parcel of Krishna. That's why we're nice to people. It's a very different approach. So therefore, pridelessness then is the natural position because pride doesn't actually help you in devotional service. Why not? You know, like that. Because you're not seeing... Pride means you're seeing things not connected to Krishna. Right? So that's the problem. When you don't see things connected to Krishna. So I think I'm the doer, but as Krishna mentioned, he has his hands and feet everywhere. He has his eyes, heads, and mouth. Everywhere is his ears. Brahman covers everything in this universe. Bhagavad Gita 13:14. Right? So, therefore, you can see like that everything's Krishna, and at all points it's service to Krishna, only if you're prideless. If you're thinking, no, I'm doing this, I'm in charge, you won't see Krishna there. If you have pride, even though Krishna is there, you know, let's say in your knowledge or in your work or in your, you know, whatever it is you're doing, as soon as there's pride, you will not see Krishna there because Krishna doesn't reveal himself. It's that simple. It's not because I'm doing this, therefore he has to show himself. That's Jaimini. That's Karma Mimamsa. You know, which is very popular in religious circles. I did my work, I get... So it's all on the platform of justice. So that's why it's not actually even real religion. It's Upadharma. Right? You know, that's why you see when you have the theistic morality, it actually has two divisions. The theistic morality where they don't actually believe so much in God, and the theistic morality where there's some actual faith in God. Right? Because on the one is, both of them, it's I do my work, I get my results. But the one is more of a business deal. It's just like, I've done my good work, so why wouldn't I get the good result?
Yes.
You know? Like that. Does that make sense? And then the other one is there is some sense of surrender and all that, but I expect still. Yes. I didn't get why God isn't like that. You know, I've surrendered. Why isn't God reciprocating? I did so much, you know, that kind of jazz. So that's yeah. So then only when, for the devotee, then they go beyond all this. That's why then they're functioning on the platform of Vijnanamaya. Because they understand that they're the soul, not the body. And so therefore they perform their religious activities just because it's pleasing to Krishna. Right? We follow our duties, whatever it is, that pleases Krishna. So it doesn't matter what it is, it's not about pride. You know? So these things where we introduce the importance of pride and all that, that's not devotional service. It's just not. You know, one's proud of being a devotee, that, you know, it's just I'm so fortunate I could be included in the group of those who are serving the Lord, you know, like Hanuman, you know, or like that, or Arjuna, or things like that, Bhima. You see that they engage that pride because it's that pride of I'm connected to Krishna, I'm so fortunate. You know, and there's that pride, you know, like a friend or the child does something very good, gets an award, and you're proud because you're connected with them. They've done it, you haven't done anything. You know. So it's a very, very, very fine point is that all these good qualities, these 26 qualities of the devotees, they're natural for when someone surrenders. And before that, we try our best not to avoid not following them, you know, in our service. But it's not because, see, I have all 26 qualities of devotees, therefore I'm advanced. No, it has nothing to do with that. They come on their own. Does that make sense? They come with bhakti. Does that make sense? You know, it's like when you get the chips, you get the mayonnaise or the ketchup. You know, it's not that, you have to separately endeavor for that. Like that. Does that make sense? No? Yeah. Yes?
In devotional service, is it wrong to expect some taste to continue serving the Lord further?
Expect some taste.
In devotional service itself, to continue devotional service.
And why would you expect some taste?
So at our level, we are very Kanishka.
No, but why do you expect taste? Why it should be there? It's just like you go and work at your job for a week, you do your work like that, you didn't spend too much time at the water cooler like that, or, goofing on all the friends in the other cubicles and all that, and so you haven't annoyed the supervisor and all that, so you expect at the end of the week you'll get paid. So you say, can we expect, taste? But what have you done? I mean, why can you say, I expect taste? Why?
We get inspired more to continue.
You get inspired, but what have you done? You come into the shop. I would be really inspired. You know, Mr. Tata, if you would give me this, Land Rover, you know, like that. Because, you know, driving to Calcutta, and it's really bad. And I want to serve Krishna, and I'd be so inspired if you'd give me this car. And what's he going to say? Really? He wouldn't just say, oh, you expected. You would be inspired. Of course I'm going to give like that. And also, you know, it's like I'm sometimes going and others are going. You know, can I have a few of them? You know, that way they won't bother me and I can just ride alone in my car. And if they need, I can use that car. Right? So think about what you're asking. Why do you say, can I expect taste? Why? Okay, think about it.
After doing service only, Maharaj, to continue more service. So that lower taste we give up easily. And
okay, so you said you've done service, therefore you deserve it.
No, not deserve.
So then why? Then why? You're saying that is what benefit you're going to get, but the point is devotional service, is it about you? Who's it about?
Krishna.
So then why can the devotee, why is it says on the opening of Nectar Devotion that one of the things of the Uttam Bhakta, I think it's 6 qualities or 9 qualities, like that, is that they always are always expecting the Lord's mercy. Why? Because they're always absorbed in the Lord. They're always connected with the Lord. And so there's no one else to give. That he's all there is. So it's up. They're always hoping for his mercy simply because they're absorbed in his service and they're connected with his service. And that's the crux, is that they're completely absorbed in the Lord. Where else would this mercy come from? It's not going to come from my money. It's not going to come from my family. It's not going to come from my friends or, you know, wealth or position or anything. It's only going to come from Krishna. And it's not like I deserve it, but it's that you serve him and he reciprocates. And so naturally we see is with his devotees, they have all these things. But it's not about that. It's about that you're focused on the Lord, and so therefore he's the most merciful, so naturally mercy comes along. But it's coming from being focused on the Lord, not focused on ourselves. You know, that's the thing, is that sadhakas, naturally you're going to start with yourself, because you are an individual, and you have, you know, the point is you're connecting yourself with Krishna. But the thing is that if you're connecting yourself with Krishna, then it's about your relationship with Krishna. It's not just about, I did this, what am I going to get? You know, oh yeah, if Krishna inspires me, I'll be inspired. You know how many life members in Calcutta I've heard say that? Everybody. Oh, when are you coming to Mayapur? Yes, when Krishna inspires me. Yeah, okay, and when are you going to make money? Oh, yes, when Krishna inspires. No, they're not going to say that. You know, hey, when are you going to go out with, you know, dinner with the family? You know, oh, yeah, whenever Krishna inspires me. No, it's when his wife tells him we're going out tonight. You know what I'm saying? Because we have to remember, and it's all, you know, karma nyeva karaste, yes, I have a right to perform my duty. They never quote the second line. Never. Not one Hindu will ever quote the second line. Right? Ma phaleshu kadachana. Amazing. But don't, you can't be attached to the fruit. They'll never say that. It just doesn't. There's only one line to that verse. Like that. That's all there is. Yeah. So. That's the thing, is we're not the cause. Why not? Because we're not the cause. So this pride, you know, because what I'm saying is connected here is, I deserve it. So then that's pride. No, it's that without Krishna's mercy, there is nothing. Since Krishna, it's Krishna's idea that we serve with him. So naturally, it's going to come from Krishna. But it's going to come from Krishna whenever Krishna feels we're qualified. So therefore, we're trying to always work in such a way to please Krishna that we become qualified that he may show his mercy. Because mercy can't come from anywhere else. No one else can give you that mercy. At the same time, as Krishna is the one endeavoring to give you that mercy, we're the ones that are not taking it. So that's why we expect it from him, because he wants to give it. But the point is, he can only give it when we're actually ready to take it. Does that make sense? So you be ready to take that mercy rather than, oh, if he gives me first, then I'll be inspired. He's giving you the holy name. Are we inspired? No. So then, that, according to Haridas Thakur, and I think Rupa Goswami mentions it, then the holy name is the highest religion. It's the greatest perfection. It's a, you know, it's like, that's the thing, is that you have to be, how you say, have that surrendered thing that these just naturally, you can remember these things. Otherwise, it's just a list. And it's not even a small list. It's like half a page. You know, just the glories of the Lord, everything. It's the perfection of any austerity. It's the perfection of any charity. It's the, you know, giving the holy name, that's the best charity. You know, it's just like that devotee in the temple after Mangal Arati who gets everybody to chant.
Yes,
he's the most charitable individual in the movement, and he has more siksha, you know, he's the Nama Guru of more people than anybody else in the movement combined.
Yes.
You know, every day hundreds, you know, and then during festivals thousands, you know, and that's every day. You know, so you can, years, you know, it's hundreds of thousands of people he's the Nama Guru for, that he's given the holy name to. Now that's charity. So that's Haridas Thakur's point, is that there is nothing more perfect. So we've already have that. So how does Rupa Goswami define enthusiasm? Because you're saying, I'll be enthusiastic. So that's very good, because Rupa Goswami, you know, it recommends that. But how does he define it? Endeavor with intelligence. So are you endeavoring? Are you using your intelligence? Okay, yes. No? Okay. If Krishna had desired to identify the jiva with the Lord, saying something similar to tat tvam asi, you are that, Chandogya Upanishad 6:87, he would not have said kshetra, kshetra gyayor jnanam. I consider knowledge to be knowledge of the field and the two types of the knowers of the field. Right? He never talked about the oneness of these two knowers. That he's not talking about. He would have said, I consider knowledge to be knowledge of the field and the two lords who are the knowers of the field. Right. In explaining the Chandogya Upanishad, Brahma Sutra 1.3.20 says, Anartas tu paramarshaha. The mention of the jiva has another purpose, to show ultimately the Lord. Similarly, in Bhagavad Gita verses, jiva is mentioned to show the one object of jiva's knowledge, the Lord. And this meaning is suitable to the context. So when you point out the jiva, it's because he's the one who knows the Lord, right? By the Lord revealing. Like that. So that's the whole point, is we know the Lord. You know these two, you know the field, and then you have the jiva and the Lord. You have to know both these, because the point is we're trying to enjoy the field, but we're not the enjoyer of the field. Krishna, he is the supreme enjoyer. And the point is we're trying to enjoy this field, and that's not our position. We're servants of the Lord. The field belongs to Krishna. But Krishna, and so therefore, us being the enjoyer of the field is inappropriate, right? And at the same time, as this field is not the field that Krishna himself enjoys. He enjoys in the spiritual world with his internal potency. And the jiva, knowing the jiva, that they come from the internal potency, right? An expansion of the internal potency, then that's where they naturally belong. So that's where the jiva will be happy. Except. One should also not take the meaning to be simply knowledge of the field and the jiva, its knower, excluding the Lord, as in atheistic Shankya philosophy, which proposes only Prakriti and Purusha, right? And this man here, Prakriti Purusha, means the jiva, not the Parama Purusha, right? Because they're taking everything's coming from Prakriti. Since the word mam, referring to the Lord, is also mentioned, right? He says me, right? One should also not take the vivartavad meaning that the jiva is the Lord under illusion. Right? Because that, yeah. Since such a statement is never provided by scriptures like the Gita and the Vedas, they never say that. The jiva is the Lord in illusion. Mayavadis make that up. Because the jiva is, you cover Brahman with illusion, you get the jiva. But if you cover the Brahman with knowledge, you get Ishwara. But then if we're saying, I am Ishwara, but the problem is if we're saying that jnana and ajnana are both illusory, then we're also, then we're equating ourselves with illusion. So by calling themselves Narayana, they're equating themselves with illusion, because they think Narayana's form also does not exist. So you can see what's the purpose? Is pride. Is control and enjoyment. It's not actually, otherwise they would call each other Brahman. I don't know how you'd say that in Sanskrit, you know. Like Namo Brahman. I don't know if you'd say like that, if there's some other way you put it together. They don't. They say Narayana. Why not Brahman? They're trying to merge in Brahman. Why are they saying Namo Narayana? You are Narayana. No, why? Because that's just also, and that's knowledge that's come from the jiva. So now when the jiva comes to knowledge, that then creates Ishwara. So that means then the jiva's created everything? You know, You know, so, but the point is, if he's created, then he's already fine. He's already at Narayan. But if that's an illusion, then what's the big deal that he creates? What's the big deal about knowledge? So that's the problem, as you see, is that they're trying to get at this point that I am God. And I am the controller and enjoyer. So even though they're saying, no, it's all one, there's all nothingness. But they're really focused on the point about Narayan and I am Narayan. Why? Because then I'm God. I do everything, and then everybody will respect me. Is if it's all illusion, why is it that Mayavad Sannyasi is so comfortable with everybody coming and, you know, washing his feet? Right, he rides on the elephant when he goes from the procession, you know, down to the, how do you say, to the Triveni to take bath, you know, during the Magh Mela, and, you know, all that. Why is it? It's all illusion. So that's the thing, is that it's just made up by conditioned souls for their own purpose. It's not what Vedas don't say that. It amounts to Buddhist philosophy. Furthermore, the explanations of Vibhartavad are illogical, like those of the Buddhists, like we just pointed out. It just doesn't make sense. But whatever it is, they go up to a point and stop there. You know, and so that's the thing, is that we can't do that. We have to take it all the way through. Otherwise, it becomes a dogma, because they can't explain why that's there. Impersonal knowledge, nirvishesha jnanam, is not the means to attain liberation, since in the previous chapter of Gita, that impersonal knowledge was rejected. Bhagavad Gita 12:1-4. Moreover, the unalloyed devotees are glorified in the same section, Bhagavad Gita 12:6, and the Lord promises to quickly deliver them from the ocean of death. Right, so he's the one that's making this act. He's the active one, right? Because he's Purusha, we're Prakriti, but we're thinking, no, I'm the Purusha, so I'm making the action, and then Prakriti will respond. But the point is that's Prakriti, and if Prakriti is responding to you because you're the Purusha, you can only deal with material energy. You can't deal with spiritual energy. Because the spiritual platform, we're Prakriti, and internal potency is Prakriti. But it's superior Prakriti. Therefore, we serve that internal potency, that superior Prakriti, serving the Lord. He's the Purusha. Does that make sense? So we always have to see is that Krishna delivers. He's the one that's active. We're taking, oh, when's he going to... He's always active. He's the Shastras. He's come as the holy name. He's come as the, you know, his whole mission. Right? He's given the Vedas. Everything, in every way possible, to somehow or another connect us to him. And we have so many reasons not to be. I say, you know, I say the Manyanavadis. You know. Yeah.
We can say that alone we cannot change our vision.
No, we can't.
So we need the guidance of a person who has a real vision.
Yes, means you can turn your attention to other aspects of the material nature.
Yes.
But the point is to be able to do it. It's by Krishna's grace. Right, you're tired of one thing. You're looking for something else. You're looking at different things. Then Krishna gives you the ability, according to your karma, to find that new interest, that new inspiration. But if you want to work in the spiritual platform, then you have to desire that. Then Krishna will reveal through the devotees. Right? So Guru, Sadhu, and Shastra, through that, then you will understand and be inspired in the spiritual reality. Does that make sense? Okay. Persons attached to impersonal jnana are not respected. Right? They're not the ones respected in this verse by Krishna. Krishna is respecting the Vaishnavas. But these other guys are just another form of materialist. Like that. You know, through the obligations within Varna and Ashram, therefore we respect. But it's due to Varnashram that we're respecting, not due to bhakti. Bhakti is the soul. So it wouldn't be about their position and all that. You just deal with them, whoever they are, in relationship to Krishna. Mm-hmm. But their position, honoring that position and all that, that's because of Varnashram. Does that make sense? You know, the scriptures give direction. So the person is being respected as an academic because of Varnashram. That we're there and trying to help them and all that and connect them to Krishna, that's because they're a living entity. That's because of bhakti. Does that make sense? Yeah. The Lord also says, everything that can be achieved by karma, penance, jnana, vairagya, mystic yoga, charity, dharma, and all other auspicious means of perfecting life, is it easily achieved by my devotee through bhakti. If somehow or other my devotee desires swarga, liberation, or residence in my abode, he easily achieves such benedictions. Srimad Bhagavatam 11, 20, 32 to 33. So even if he wants that, he can easily get these. While the karmis and jnanis, with great difficulty, they attain something. And even that, they don't really attain, they won't attain his abode. It is also said in the Moksha Dharma, the person who takes shelter of Narayan attains the Lord without performing acts to attain the four goals of life. Right? So they don't have to perform activities to develop dharma, artha, kama, and moksha. Right? They simply have to act in bhakti, like that. You know, and you use whatever suitable tools are there that are useful. So then he may be using this karma, penance, jnana, vairagya, mystic yoga, charity, dharma, and all other auspicious like that. In Krishna's service, but he's not trying to attain those. That's the thing. In the 13th chapter of Gita, the Lord points out devotion to the Lord particularly, so that the praise in the chapter 12 is not wasted. Rate, confirming its statements, the section concludes with this. Thus I have described conclusively the field, the process of knowing, and the object of knowledge. My devotee, understanding this, becomes qualified for prema. Bhagavad Gita 13.19. Udriti Srila Prabhupada. The Lord is described in summary the body, knowledge, and the knowable. This knowledge is of three things, the knower, the knowable, and the process of knowing. Combining these are called vijnana, or the science of knowledge. Right? When you know all these, that's called vijnana. When you know an aspect of something, that's jnana. Right? Or even you've heard about all three, but you just understand it. You don't know necessarily fully how it applies and its value. That's called jnana. But when you understand it and can practice that, you know, realize that, that's called vijnana. But it requires all these three. The knower, the knowable, and the process of knowing. Yes.
What would be the difference between knowledge and the process?
Means, let's say we have we're trying to, let's say like this, learn this philosophy here. So that's the knowledge. Right? Then the process of knowledge, or the knowable, right? You know, so then the process of knowledge is going to be sitting down, you know, hearing in the association of Vaishnavs, you know, discussing on these topics like that, you know, with faith in the, you know, the orders of the guru, of the parampara, like that. That's going to be the process. Right? And then the knower is going to be the individual jiva. Right? At the same time as there's the ultimate knower, which is Krishna. So he's actually the knowable. So then when this knowledge is seen in the context of knowing Krishna, then we actually understand. When we see, we as the knower, we're servant of Krishna. The process is how Krishna gave and how we can come closer to Krishna, that connected to Krishna, the parampara. And this body of knowledge, how to use it, know it, and use it in the Lord's service, then we actually, that would be vijnana. You want to say yes?
Also, the means of attaining knowledge also can come in the process. The pramana is a part of the process, and the prameyas is actually the knowledge itself.
Yes, yes, yes. Does that make sense?
Yeah.
So, here is that you're taking these three, but then these three can also be applied in so many ways. But the main point is whatever area you take, you'll always have three. Right? Because everything's coming from Krishna's Sarup, so Sat Chit Ananda, so it'll always have these three divisions. Does that make sense? It's just where you apply it. Like that. So, yeah. Perfect knowledge can be understood by the unalloyed devotees of the Lord directly. Right? So they, because they're connected to the Lord, so anything, they understand it directly because they see it always in context of the Lord. So they're never not connected to the Lord. So everything they see in that way. So it's not that they're seeing everything at once. You know, we always look at it by volume. Oh, if I know so much knowledge, I know so much volume of knowledge. You know, but the point is, it's not about that. It's about whatever it is, whatever your value is, and wherever you're focusing at this moment, that you know. That you see in connection with Krishna. Like I'm cooking, then I know the cooking connection to Krishna. I'm sitting in class, I see that connected to Krishna. I'm cleaning the room, I see that connected to Krishna. It's not this impersonal concept where, oh, just it's just the volume of unlimited and all that kind of thing. No. You know, but I want to know, I need to know, but if I do know, then my head will crack and I'll die and all these kind of stupid things. Right? Isn't it the guy who always gets the unlimited knowledge, they always die, right? You know, always on screen also. But just so, in other words, they're pointing out, just don't take your, you know, things too so seriously. Right? Yes.
So that's why it's established in beforehand that it's a medium size, the absolute knowledge is of the medium size.
Yeah. Very good. Yeah, so it's not the unlimited. He's unlimited, but of medium size. So he's knowable. But at the same time, as he's unlimited. So that's why he's unique. He's in his own category. He's God. So it's just inconceivable. That's why inconceivable is used. So Krishna's pointed out, you see, in these other 7th through 11th chapters about his universal form. You know, how he is everything, all in all various aspects, in his vibhutis, in his various representations and potencies, and, you know, things that we value, things that are common to us, things that are important to us. But then, having done that, now it's about him, the person, and relationship with him, the person, in bhakti. That's the actual thing that's being explained. Right? So all that can be known by knowing Krishna. So the purpose of understanding knowledge and understanding the spiritual is to know Krishna. But just to know knowledge and not know Krishna, then is imperfect. It's not perfect knowledge. It only becomes perfect when it's connected to Krishna. So, yes?
The process of learning, it means you can get only in the association of devotees?
Yes. It means in the association of devotees. It means either sitting with the devotees in a sangha or sitting with the book and yourself and reading, because that's also, so, like here. Then Jiva Goswami is speaking here. Then we see here now Srila Prabhupada's being quoted. He's talking from Gita, so we're associated with Krishna and Arjuna. So we're getting so much association when we're going through here. So the point is but that faith, that this is where knowledge comes from. In other words, we're hearing it from the transcendental source. We can't be distracted with the idea that those who are not transcendental, they have any actual real knowledge to give us. Right? Because they can't. There's absolutely no way whatever they say is itself going to generate bhakti. So it has no use. Now, in oneself appreciating things in connection with bhakti, you may be able to take that knowledge and use it to serve Krishna. Does that make sense? You know, from a materialist, you may have learned some technique of what they're working with material energy, but you see it in connection with Krishna. They don't. So it's only by association with the transcendentalists that therefore now we can see this, how we can use it in Krishna's service. But just saying, oh, but there's this and that, we're using it for Krishna, so they're also just as good. These are all material attachments. These are all material illusions, material identities. You have to understand, the knowledge came from Krishna in the first. Why does that person know that in the first place? Because Krishna is, by their karma, revealing it. So the knowledge comes from the universal form. It doesn't come from that individual. We attribute it to them, and you know, that will you call, say their name when it comes to that. Like that. You see, Prabhupada, even he's talking about the materialists, you know, when he uses an example from there, he'll name who's there, who it is, you know, according to this one, then it's this. And so then that's there, but that came from Krishna. And so this person, it's they, by their karma, then are able to understand this. You know, at another time it's revealed to somebody else. Like we mentioned before, is that you have that whole thing of, you know, it's a famous, what do you call it? Wilbur's one of them. Wright brothers. Wilbur was one of the Wright brothers. And so that they invented flight and all this and that. But there's also documentation that there was some people in France who were doing the same thing at the same time. Right? So they'll also say, "As no, we invented." But I think it came down to by date that the Wright brothers were the first one to get their plane off the ground, you know, and they actually flew for, you know, a Kitty Hawk for, I don't know, like a, I don't know, 100 meters or something, you know. You know, not much, but, you know, it's better than nothing. Like that, you know. They outdid the, what do you call it, the sugar squirrel, you know. They can also fly, you know, so whatever. So like that. So then they're known for that. But otherwise, you always see is that many times that there's that when somebody comes out with, there's two people who know it in completely different locations, no connection to each other. Why? Because Krishna, the material energy, by Krishna's authorization, then reveals these things. You know, she keeps things hidden, and then they come out. You know, that's how you go from, you know, they had a very developed culture and all that, the Greeks, and then the something happened, and then for 200 years it was just no culture, nothing. And then again the culture comes back up. You know, we say, oh, it's lost, it's gone forever. Then they had the Dark Ages, and then it came back. You know, and this is well before, this is all BCE, you know. I prefer the BC. Yeah.
It's
yeah. It has, it's more personal. It has more meaning, right? So that's the whole thing, is that those earlier earlier time that came up there, they have. And then Europe, then it has its Dark Ages and all that, but it wasn't Dark Ages in over on this side. You know? So that's the whole thing, is that these things are removed and revealed again by the modes of nature. So then here Krishna, then if we desire to know him, then in the association, he'll give us that association of Vaishnavas, in which we can. And if we apply that, then we develop. So, perfect knowledge can be understood by the unalloyed devotees of the Lord directly. Others are unable to understand. Not that they may understand, sometimes just they can't. The monists say that the ultimate stage, these three items become one. But the devotees do not accept this. Knowledge and development of knowledge mean understanding oneself in Krishna consciousness. We are being led by material consciousness. But as soon as we transfer all consciousness to Krishna's activities and realize that Krishna is everything, then we attain real knowledge. In other words, knowledge is nothing but the preliminary stage of understanding devotional service perfectly. Right? In the 15th chapter, this will be very clearly explained. Bhagavad Gita 13:19 purport. So this knowledge, it's a preliminary for bhakti.
Yes.
So all this spiritual knowledge. So that's what's so wonderful is here. How is it that you have people that don't know anything about spiritual life? And with minimal spiritual knowledge, they are given devotional understanding. Right? And understand that, and they're situated there nicely. Right? They're fully engaged in Krishna service. Maybe the religious aspect, the cultural aspects might have been a little bit weak. But the point is that they had that. How is that? Because it's beyond. It's not dependent upon that. It's useful for. So If you're dealing very minimally with the material energy, then the basic spiritual is enough to bring you to devotion. If you're more technically involved with the material, you need more technical spiritual knowledge to show its proper situation. And then you can... That's why it says the gopis are not scholars. They just appreciate Krishna, have that attraction to Krishna, and surrender. They don't need the spiritual knowledge to confirm their bhakti. You know, like sometimes, oh, where is that? You know, how is that? And this and that. No, it's just the acharya said it. This is the way it is. Like that. That's bhakti. Then if you want, yeah, they have the technical points to do it. Vedanta Sutra explains that. That's spiritual knowledge. You know? Then, oh, no, but that's too complicated. Then don't ask. You know? Point is that you have to balance things. Does that make sense? That's the whole thing. You have to balance.
Common person nowadays, they want everything instant, so they don't want any endeavor. They don't want to put any effort. So they ask those questions as you mentioned, but they don't even want to, you know, make a minimum effort to understand. So actually, they cheat themselves.
Yes, they cheat themselves. They cheat themselves. Because you see is that they are applying their intelligence into other areas, you know, and that, you know, everybody wants instant, but they're using their intelligence how to work within the environment to get the maximum instant. Like that. So what we're saying is devotional service also can happen in an instant. You just have to have that surrender. So it's just a matter of hearing, associating, you know, with the devotees and the you know, name, form, qualities of Krishna, so that we develop that sense of, how you say, the desire for surrendering and giving up the material energy. So that's why it's technically there as much as we're attached. Like we see, when we get down more and more into the technical philosophy, we start to see more and more how it's there in our life. And there's little angles, aspects in which we're not surrendered in that. You know, our values are such that we are not... that in that aspect, we're not absorbed in Krishna. Does that make sense? In that aspect, we're not absorbed. And so when we become absorbed, that's then where, you know, but that means we give up that attachment to whatever it is that's causing it. You know? Because if we're not absorbed in Krishna, that means we're absorbed in something else. So when we give that up, then we can, if we're associated with devotees, we have the value for it, then we'll be absorbed in Krishna. Does that make sense? But endeavor must be there. That's why, and it's natural, because where are we expanding from? Right? We're expanding from Samvit. So Samvit is the active principle. Right, the jnana is the situational. The the sandini is the situational. The hladini is the experiential. So where does activity come? It comes from samvit. Does that make sense? So in a situation, I perform an activity, I get an experience. You know, it's just natural. These three are there. You say they all become one, but the point is. Then how is it maintained? If I do something, I'm doing something now and I get a result, do something, get a result. So then I do it and I say, then it's all just going to continue like that. How does it continue? You may have, the particular one experience now may continue. But the point is this ananda that they talk about. You know, does that make sense? So the point is, if it's so great, then okay, that one level of ananda, and that's it, and that's all it'll be. But we see the nature is to always increase. So in the spiritual world, then you're performing an activity, getting that result. That result is eternal, yes. But still, the situations maintain, you maintain, the Lord is there, the devotee's activity is still there. And then others are generated. Just because just because it becomes eternal doesn't mean that it doesn't, they don't exist. Because we're saying it becomes all eternal, that means all three are eternal. Otherwise, I have to say the other two are illusion and disappear. But then if they're illusion, how can illusion create transcendental? So it doesn't make sense. They all just say, oh, it all becomes one, and we go, oh, yes. But the point is if they all become one, which one? Or what do you call it when it's all together? And so, this verse states that by having bhakti, with distinction between jiva and ishvara, one can understand these subjects. Only when you do that. When you say we're the same, you can't. When you don't even know there's you or Ishvara, then. Like, or they'll say, oh, we know God, but they don't know who they are. Or they know themselves, they don't know God. Or they think they're one, or they don't exist. Like that. Thus, the devotee is designated as the Kshetrajna of himself. The Lord, the object of knowledge, is designated as the Kshetrajna of all beings. After pointing out the object of knowledge along with the field and knower of the field, jiva, Krishna then shows that the natures of the jiva and the Lord are indestructible, and thus jiva cannot change into the Lord. Because if they're indestructible, like that, they'll say, yes, I am indestructible, I'm Brahman. But then that means your individuality is also indestructible. Because if you say, no, that goes away, but then that means then your position is destructible. And if it's destructible, then what's the point? Why would Brahman have something destructible as part of it? You say, I become Brahman, but then the point is your illusion. You're not part of Brahman. If that illusion is there, can make jivas, and then those jivas can get out of illusion and get into Brahman, the illusion still remains. Right? So if the illusion remains, so that means that the jivas never, if they're not existing by the Mayavad philosophy, then what's the point of you, all the three become one? Because you're saying like they become one, but they never were, never will be. Because it's an illusion. Illusion separate. You know, and if you're saying no, but then the illusion's coming from Brahman, it's a transformation of Brahman, but then the point is that means it's also Brahman. And then the jiva is also Brahman. Right? So Brahman's Brahman, illusion's Brahman, jiva's Brahman, because it's all coming from Brahman. And so then why do you need to say that they're all one already? But they're distinct. No? Yeah.
Huh? It's interesting how 13th and 15th chapter of Gita closely connected to Paramatma Sandarbha, because I found myself to teach those, particularly 15th chapter, it's very difficult because it's very technical. Mm. So usually devotees just read through and then that's it.
Haribol.
Yeah. But now we see why it is so technical.
Yeah. Because otherwise, there's a lot of ways we think we're supreme, you know, controller and enjoyer, and we don't see Krishna in it. No, without this you can't do, and this and that. Where does Krishna come into this? You know? Yeah, so that's the difficulty, is that it, just in our practical day-to-day life, we're missing these points. So, and you can say it's okay, the major point, but that point is, what's pure unalloyed mean? There is no point that's not connected to Krishna. That's the uniqueness. Means there may be nothing illusory in pure devotional service. I mean, when we say pure devotion, we mean the pure unalloyed devotion. But you can also have pure devotion meaning where they accept the aspects of liberation. Not Sayuja, but of the other four, Vaishnava liberation. But what's the whole point of Vaishnava liberation? Is it technically about God or about themselves? It's about themselves. But it's about themselves as the jiva, as servant of God. So it does have that spiritual. It is transcendental. So that's why then it is allowed. It's part of the scene in the spiritual world. But pure unalloyed, it's not about themselves at all. It's just about Krishna. So that means the intensity is greater, right? Because if it's about you and not about God, the intensity can only be as much as the jiva has. Right? You can't get more than that. Right? And even then, he's covered. So how much are you going to get? Like if I take a light bulb and put a blanket over it, how much light do I get? Right? You know, if I put a light-colored blanket, then, you know, we get a little bit of a glow. That's motive goodness, right? So that's all you're going to get. But now when you connect to the Lord, then you see is now you're connected with that unlimited, and so then the ananda from prema is so much greater. Right? And so then when this prema, it's about the Lord, but it also has that aspect about themselves. It won't have the as much intensity. In other words, the one is just about yourself, how much intensity is there. Right? Then you add the Lord into it, now the intensity is greater. When it's just about the Lord, he's the so it'll be the most intense. So pure unalloyed devotion gives the greatest experience. Like that. So yeah.
We can have some resistance.
Yes, we have some resistance. Yeah, I say. Like before the French were famous, that I say resistance.
Resistance.
Resistance, you know. Everyone gets on their bicycle and rides around and, yeah.
Does it seem right that in this course slowly, you know, it's more about pure unalloyed devotional service.
Yes.
Slowly.
Exactly. Yes. And we're just on Paramatma now.
Yes.
As we're starting to like get a glimmer of it. It's kind of like, what's this other stuff? Okay, yeah, Krishna. Then it's like, so therefore, use it for Krishna. Then we'll see how wonderful Krishna is and the devotees and everything in the Krishna Sandarbha. Right? Then you'll talk about bhakti and all the, you know, the nice things about bhakti and the techniques of bhakti and then prema. Then. So even this, it gets up. Even when we get to the point we accept this pure unalloyed devotion, then there's so many more steps after that that are just more and more tasty. You know, it's just like, there's this funny feeling in my stomach and I can't get rid of it. No matter what I do, I stand up, lie down, sit down, run around, this and that, and then I figure out that, oh, it's by eating. So now I have that realization. Oh, it's by pure unalloyed devotion. Now then there's the whole process of eating and what you can eat and the association of devotees and then like this. So it just gets more and more. So that's why it's said is that the understanding that we're not the body, we're the soul, and being situated on that, that gives you more happiness than anything that the material world has to offer. But then, devotional service, it's so much greater than that. It's like an unlimited ocean. Right? So that's the thing, is to have that faith that that's possible. That we as individuals can be happy, because you have that, we have that optimism that we could be, but at the same time we have that pessimism is that no one's happy and all that. So that makes sense.
But also there is a need of the spirit of adventure to go.
Yes.
From the, we can say, happy because we don't suffer, to happy to please Krishna 100%. 24/7.
Yes, yes.
It's a big step.
Hmm? Yes, yes. So that's why the whole process is it's step by step. It has that steps to it.
Yes.
Because as we are able to surrender, Krishna reciprocates. And if we take these steps and like that, so our consciousness moves up and up. So we have the philosophy, we have the religion.
Yes.
And so then you want to see that they're all on that platform of the Ananda Maya.
Yes, yes.
Because otherwise we may accept the philosophy of Ananda Maya, but basically have most of our focus will be on the platform of Vijnanamaya,
yes,
just about the spiritual, and we're not the body, and
yes,
you know, spiritual, and this is good and that. But then a lot of times we're just talking on Manamaya, about what's the right thing to do, you know, what was it? The karma, the penance, the jnana, vairagya, the mystic yoga, the charity, the dharma, you know, yeah, good brahmachari, and this and that, which is all useful in these higher points. But we might put too much attention. And then that's if we're just working in, you know, what we've been given.
Yes.
But if we fall back on our own previous samskaras,
yes,
Then we're going to tend to work on the economic, the justice, the mundane morality, you know, that comes from contrived, you know, the social construct of morality, like that.
Our background,
yeah. And all the time hiding the fact that it's about our senses. That's the interesting thing when you have in the Purushas, the Anamaya Purusha. The Anamaya Purusha basically means the body. So when it says this is the head, means the Anamaya Purusha means this is the head of the, you know, this is the left arm, this is the right arm, this is the torso, you know, and then the lower part of the body is the basis, means the upper part sits on the lower, it moves around by that, but it also is that the lower part means sense gratification. And then when it says it goes into Pranamaya, then it says that there's the subtler of the pranas, right? And so then you have all the activities and that you do. And so we can work together and do everything and make things happen and all that in the Pranamaya. But the basis is the Anamaya Purusha. So it's still sense gratification. That's why it's extended sense gratification. There's this idea, oh no, it's so noble. It's still just, it's all of 100% about sense gratification, but we don't talk about it. Because if we talk about it, then we're not endeavoring to all work together to get it. Right, we all get together. We talk economics. We talk social justice. We talk, you know, arts. We talk sciences. All these things that will refine and make for a nicer atmosphere in which everybody can enjoy. That's the basis. So that's the what's missed in it. It seems like, oh, see, it's so elevated. It is just a cooperative way. You know, trying to use at least enough good qualities that we don't kill each other so that we all get sense gratification. That's it. There is no other purpose to the Pranamaya. It doesn't have any other point. It's not trying to attain Manamaya. So that's why then the basis of the Vedic culture is it's Manamaya. Artha and Kama come anyway. Right, and so therefore we see the artha in connection with dharma, we see kama in connection with dharma, you know, but we see that dharma connected to you know, moksha, the spiritual, and we see the spiritual connected to Krishna. So therefore whatever we do, you know, whatever we do, whatever you eat, whatever you give in charity, you do for Krishna. So if you do that, you've already attained the spiritual, you've already attained the material. And any of these lower ones, they're just included, you know. So, yes.
As also in Pranamaya, it's said that the earth is the basis. So generally, people talk about, oh, this will create this level of pollution on the earth.
And yes, very good point. Yeah, they're always talking about the earth and the pollution and you know, what do we. You know, giving our next generation, what are we leaving for them, you know.
And sometimes as devotees also, they get into unnecessary tension that if we do they like this, then it may harm.
And they're all living in the middle of a city. And the bigger the city, the more they're worried about it. I'm probably sure if you go out to Montana, they aren't that worried. You know.
It's interesting. If we just check on the basis of all the Purushas also, like an Anamaya Purusha is all finally worried about right now, if it is sustaining my life, it's okay. It's like about individual person. Yeah. And Pranamaya is okay.
Sustaining the earth. Because
sustaining earth for some time.
It's the general place where everybody can work together. Because otherwise, where else do you work? That's why then you see is that these same Pranamaya people, they don't mind looking at, you know, all this thing is they're looking at the moon. Yeah, it might get too crowded here and all that. There's 7 billion people, they're all still here. There's plenty of space. You know, plenty of space. You know, how big is the city? It's only a certain amount. I mean, if you want to see city, that's Mega City 1. That goes all the way from New York all the way down to Washington, D.C. That's a huge thing. Right? So then you have that. Things like that. So now as you have, you know, 20 million, you can have 100 million, 200 million. You just keep going. It's just how much they can manage. So the whole point comes down is that they're talking about these things. It's still going to be either it's the earth, or it's going to be the moon, or it's going to be the Mars. Someone's worried about the land. Someone's worried about the air. Someone's worried about the water. You know, someone's worried about the aquatics in the water. Someone's worried about the animals on the land. You know, like that. Not too many people worried about the birds in the air, but.
Also, the next level, as Manomaya Purusha Maharaj said, okay, what is the right thing to do so that, given by some superior authority, so that we sustain the whole thing?
Yes.
But it's not still about the jiva.
It's not about the jiva. They know about the jiva. That's how you can do long term. In other words, if you don't know about the jiva, how do you work this whole life so that next life you'll get, you know, go to the heavenly planets? So they know about the jiva, but the decision's not about the jiva. So that's why Vijnanamaya is about the jiva. So that's why we do it, what is good for us to be engaged on the spiritual platform. That's Vijnanamaya. Then Anandamaya means is engaging in Krishna's service. So it's naturally the spontaneous. So we can say, oh no, but I'm on that platform. But that's given as the platform of spontaneous devotional service. Vaidhi Bhakti is Vijnanamaya, because it's because you're the soul. That's why you're doing it. While the other one is, no, you just are attracted to Krishna. That's why you're doing it. So slightly different. But the effect is going to be, it means from the Vijnanamaya, the effect is going to be that of serving Krishna. So that's why we don't need to make too much of a distinction. Because your goal is there. Someone has to be careful, because one can have the spiritual understanding there, but then you can also be following the religion of a lower level. You know, the modern social things are all pranamoy, and the, you know, world religions are kind of they're kind of in between pranamoy, manamoy. They accept the supreme, but for many of them, they don't have a especially the Christian. There's no regulatory process. All the others have a regulatory process of their eating, their sleeping, everything like that. If they're following a little strictly. But in Christianity, where's the regulation? Unless you're a monk or something. And then it's just a matter of, if you're a monk, you live in the monastery, you get this much wine a day. You know? And if you don't take it, that's better. You'll get more piety. But if you want to take it, you only get this much. And I'm not sure if that's based on more than this, they get drunk and they can't do anything. Or more than this, they can't maintain enough wine for the whole year for everybody. You know, so there is some, but otherwise there's basically no regulation. So then it's only the social regulation is there. So therefore it's pranamaya. Like that. So you can say it's philosophically they're theistic, but socially it's not. You know? It'll be a little bit controlled, but not much. So one has to be very careful. Otherwise it's the more distance, the harder it is. So from Vijnanamaya to Anandamaya, that's easy. But if you're on Vijnanamaya, your philosophy is Anandamaya, but your religion is Pranamaya. And you're saying Manamoya, that's Maya. That's Maya. We don't care for that. We only care for, you know, Anandamaya. But their social is on that level. Then you have such a, it's not a good mix.
It's like a crazy situation.
It's crazy. Yeah. 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 It's crazy. So the idea of Krishna consciousness, become less crazy. Or at least become first aware that we are crazy.
Yes.
You know, like Prabhupada's, what's that article? Who's crazy? Right? Om Hare Krishna, Hare Krishna, Krishna Krishna, Hare Hare. Hare Rama, Hare Rama, Rama Rama, Hare Hare. Jai Srila Prabhupada ki.